This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. Hey everyone, this is just a fun little episode we recorded before Christmas that we didn't have time to get out before the holiday set in. I hope you enjoy it. We will be back on Thursday with the first episode of Season 2 with a brand new format. So tune in then when we'll be going over the physiology of the world of Aquaman. Okay, bye.
Killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Welcome, one and all, to the final episode for the season of Cinematica Animalia, the podcast where we take somebody's favorite movie monster, alien, freak of nature, loose slimy object found inside a bodily orifice, and see how it might work in the real world, looking at their ecology and their physiology. My name is Sam Perrin. I run ecologyforthemasses.com and I'm a PhD student at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. With me also today in our Royal Rumble, my co-hosts, a BDSM wax figure of Captain Jack Harkness and a plank of wood.
Can't disagree.
Their names, normally, though, are Adam Hishar from Arkansas. Yep.
Even better.
Co-author on Ecology for the Masses.
Pronounced Adam Hitachi.
Hitachi? No, it's Hishar. It's Hishar. Oh, it's a soft K and a long A. And Dave, who's a vet in Canada, allegedly. Yeah. Not with us again today is...
Tinquis the third...
Tinquis, the third or fourth? Tinquis. Oh, okay. Sounds like a Mediterranean foot disease. He is
just Tinkles,
Dave,
for short.
Do we know what he's doing today? Do we know what Tinkles Jr. is doing today?
Apparently Tinkles Jr. today is attempting to bring back the unicorn. What I meant was the centaur using a centaur. Horse and himself. He's attempting to start the line all by himself. I assure you guys that no veterinary group has approved such an action. But you know what? TJ's a big fan of the mythical genre, and he's just dedicated to try and get that line done.
You should really, like, we all advised him not to post these sort of, like, research projects on his Twitter feed, but he just went and did it anyway.
Or his personal website.
Anyway, okay, so today we are doing a little bit of a different show. There will be no PSA on news today. We are going to get straight into it. What we are doing is, as you may know, throughout the season, we've always ended our podcast episodes with a little fun versus of whichever monster we were focusing on versus something vaguely thematically
related
to see who would... Yeah, tangentially related to see who would come out on top. And we are going to get those eight beasties or people or whatever they may be to face off against each other now. To decide who's the winner of Season 1 of Cinematica Animalia before we take a break over Christmas, and then come back for Season 2 with a brand new format next year.
Let them fight.
Are you sure there's nothing we can do?
Let them fight.
You just want to see giant monsters fight, don't you?
Let them fight.
Now, we're going to go through these eight beasties very quickly to tell you just a little bit about how they got here. Starting with Christopher Lee, Sir Christopher Lee in his prime. Who would like to take us through how Sir Christopher Lee got here?
Sir Christopher Lee was a member of the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, so he was basically what James Bond thinks he is, and then he was a super suave, sneaky spy. He was a hard motherfucker.
Yes, and he got here by beating Treebeard from Lord of the Rings.
In fact, all of the Ents. And we said Christopher Lee versus the Ents, and we more or less decided Christopher Lee would win that.
Yes, the theory was that Christopher Lee was the Ents. When we looked at them, we decided that they were a mammal covered in tree growth, very slow, not very fast moving, probably not that intelligent, and that Christopher Lee would have been able
very
to
ponderous.
Quite easily, take them out with an axe or some such. Implement. Anyway, so that's how Christopher Lee got here. He is our number one seed today. Our second seed is The Flood from the episode Waters of Mars from Doctor Who, who won an all-in brawl between six very, very odd Doctor Who monsters. The Flood is basically, we've decided, a virus carried through water. It's extraterrestrial in origin, and it can essentially take over a human host. So, the number three, our third seed today, the Graboids. Adam, do you want to take us through how the what the Graboids are and how they got here?
Yeah, and we ended up placing the Graboids. Who was our bad guy for the Graboids?
Against Kevin Bacon from Footloose.
Ah, right. Yes. So the Graboids being our underground dwelling monsters from Perfection Nevada and our fictional universe. Mm-hmm. And being our sort of tunneling monsters, we came up with the idea that a lot of their physiology was going to have to change to allow them to sort of do what they did, but not as much as we originally thought. They were going to be a lot more slower moving. They were probably going to be a lot lighter than they thought originally that they were. They probably weren't going to be able to hold a truck. Hold a truck back or do anything like that. But still potentially possible to move through some form of dirt or exert some of the abilities that we thought they would. That's still sort of up in debate. But we decided that when faced off against Kevin Bacon from the beloved Footloose, if he felt that he really did need to dance and just get that energy out, we imagine that somewhere through that factory scene where he's running around jumping from various thing to thing, he finds himself on a sort of loose spot of gravel. And at that point, Kevin Bacon's dancing career is cut very short, and he learns the real reason why the preacher told him there should be no dancing in the town. Because they built it above a Graboid sanctuary.
Our fourth seed is a quiet boy from the movie A Quiet Place. Huge, impenetrable aliens.
Ish.
Who hunt exclusively using sound. We've had to make the concession that their hide is not impenetrable. They can get through with, you know, a well-targeted shotgun blast.
As well as a tank blast, they could be run over by a car. They weren't going to be as strong as we originally thought.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. However, still quite menacing. Very, very large teeth. Reasonably fast. Faster than human, that's for sure. And quite terrifying in general. Then our fifth... They got there by beating Dwight Schrute from The Office.
Yeah.
In honor of his association with old mate James Krasinski, John Krasinski, who one of the stars of 2018's A Quiet Place. Great movie. Now our fifth seed is Alonzo Harris from Training Day, of King Kong Ain't Got Shit on Me fame. Basically a dirty cop with insane resourcefulness, and he is surgical with Databitch being a shotgun.
So and he beats, you know, Denzel.
Yes, and he got there by beating King Kong. Our King Kong was not what you would call an aesthetically pleasing or a physically intimidating individual, apart from the fact he was very large. The only way he would have been able to beat Denzel is by falling in the right direction. That was our first episode, our King Kong, of Kong Skull Island. A hairless, toeless freak, we decided. Sixth seed is like Hans from The Troll Hunter, who is the real monster of the movie.
So much so.
A man who faced off against Bear Grylls to at this stage and just swiped him with one of his enormous bear paws. A bit of a hermit, very useful in the woods, probably suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Adam or Dave, do you want to take us through how Gollum got here, our second Lord of the Rings reference?
I feel like this is always in Adam territory.
Yeah,
so Gollum we decided to pit against the Mogwai, the creatures from the Gremlins fame, of Gremlins fame.
Specifically a kitchen full of them.
Yeah, yes. I'm getting there. Basically, Gollum walks into the house. There is a kitchen full of rabid gremlins. Not the cute Mogwai, the intimidating, nasty gremlins. And Gollum, being the terrifying psychopath he is, just kills the shit out of them. They don't stand a chance. There's too many tools. There's too many sharp weapons. And Gollum's got these really good strangling hands that are just the perfect size to just pop a gremlin's head right off.
And we did come to the conclusion that Gollum was under the belief that one of the gremlins, he didn't know which, had his precious.
Yeah.
So,
And I think Gollum was lent an advantage here by the fact that we decided during the course of our Gremlins episode, which will be coming out, which will have come out by the time we recorded this, that the Gremlins cannot be anywhere near as intelligent as they are in the movies.
No.
Yeah.
Yes. Our final monster is Richard Strickland, Michael Shannon's character from The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro's 2017, vastly overrated film, I felt.
Whoa!
I really didn't like it, and also Sally Hawkins has sex with a fish man, which I'm pretty sure is illegal. Anyway.
It's very much illegal. It's a good movie, but nobody talks about how weird it is.
Sam just sounded like a 12-year-old kid reading like his book report. He was like, and the lead character had sex with a fish, and I believe that is illegal. This is Sam Perrin signing off. I did not enjoy the book.
I'm just going to cut that out, Dave. I ain't having that shit.
There's like a holiday advertising going around TV in the U.S. right now, advertising for VR, like VR goggles, and you can watch movies through them. And they have an actress sitting in a bathtub wearing the VR goggles, reaching out and caressing something. And
it cuts the shape of water.
And she's like, come here, fish man. Like, that's so fucking gross. This guy is a clammy fish man. You don't want to fuck him.
So many diseases. Anyway.
He's got a cloaca.
Derived from the Latin word for sewer, a cloaca is a zoological term referring to the small orifice where the intestinal, urinary, and reproductive tracts all empty.
Our first matchup, to see who will go through, we're doing this in a in an Australian Australian rules football finals format. Our first final will be Christopher Lee versus A Quiet Boy. Now, not versus A Quiet Boy. This is what happens in the scenario. I've invented scenarios. Dave and Adam are going to have to argue it out and convince me who is going to win. One of you is going to take one of the sides, and you get to present your arguments, and then, I'll go off. Does that sound good? We didn't actually talk about this format beforehand. I've just realized.
Nope, I like it. Are you going to assign each of us which side?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Sweet. Perfect.
Okay,
love it.
So... Christopher Lee versus A Quiet Boy from A Quiet Place. Christopher Lee is sent into America, and this is a world where the Quiets only invaded the continent of America, and he knows everything about them, right? He knows everything about them, he's forearmed with knowledge, but he is given nothing. He is rowed into shore in, a fjord where there's waves crashing against the disguises.
We don't have fjords in the US.
Well, whatever, a bay. A sound, I think, is what you guys call them. Where there's waves crashing against the shore, so his arrival is disguised noise-wise, and he has to get from one side of America to the other, killing as many quiets along the way as possible.
Fucking American Jeez. Takes a beautiful word like fjord, and he's like, nah, bay.
Yeah.
I want bay.
Well, there's a difference between a bay and a fjord. A fjord has to be created by a glacier.
A fjord is a much cooler word, but a lot of people here are not going to know what you're talking about.
Fair enough. Yes, true. Okay.
This is how you get Michael Bay.
Explosions.
Dave, you are going in favor of the Quiets. Adam, you are taking the side of Sir Christopher Lee. Who does Excellent. Christopher Lee make it to the other side of America?
Absolutely, Sir Christopher Lee makes it to the other side of America.
How?
No,
this
okay.
man.
Yeah,
this
so.
Man was
Adam.
Incredibly
make your argument.
He spoke upwards of 10 languages, I want to say. He was incredibly resourceful.
Well, I mean, he's not
going
to be able to speak.
So
I mean, languages aren't going
to
help you in a situation where you're not
allowed
to speak.
It speaks to his intelligence. Let me
It's actually going to be a negative. They're going to pick up on sound. Christopher Lee is going to be showing off, and then suddenly, bam, gone.
Too bad he was a spy, a.k.a. a sneaky boy. So, the U.S. has some of the most guns per capita in the world. The Quiets have wiped out just about everybody at this point, as we know from the movie, and it's, if anything, it's a much more reduced population than it used to be. So Sir Christopher Lee has access to a smorgasbord of firearms.
If he's in Texas!
He's smart. In the U.S., period. You go anywhere into the country, there's going to be some crazy dude with about a million guns. Even if they only use them for hunting, you have a gun for deer, you have a gun for turkey, you have a small gun for squirrel, then you have your gun for self-defense. If you have one. So, there are more than enough guns, more than enough ammo, more than enough crossbows if you want to be quiet at any kind of hunting goods store you go to. So, he's going to use all of his resourcefulness, finding all these weapons, trekking quietly and slowly across the countryside, all 3,000 miles or 4,800 kilometers, something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Okay,
From sea to shining sea.
So Adam's made his case. Dave, how do you think this is going to go down? What's
Christopher Lee's downfall? I honestly don't think this is going to go in Christopher Lee's favor. I love the guy, don't get me wrong. But I feel like Christopher Lee trying to pass over all this territory. One, it doesn't matter how quiet he thinks he's going to be. He was a great spy when he was moving around other human beings. He's not going to be great moving through the woods with all these creatures running around. Two, he's got to sleep. And Christopher Lee looks like a snorer. He totally looks like a snorer. All right, and that's just going to do him completely over. I'm resting my ground right there. And you know what? There are lots of areas where he'll get guns, but there are going to be lots more of your pansy Obama-loving Democratic areas that he's going to be able to pass through, and he's not going to have any guns to get to.
I think you're taking a look at how many liberals you think there are in the U.S. Most of the U.S. is rural countryside, much like I think Alberta is in Canada. So there's just lots of farms, lots of guns, lots of conservatives.
Yeah, and we've decided that the quiets can be taken down by gunshots. But then, I mean, if he shoots one, that's going to bring like three or four more.
Depending on how many there are per area, because we had a discussion on what their population density would be.
So
like,
if he goes north and heads through Canada instead?
I think that they are going to be able to track him. They're going to be able to find him. I can totally see Christopher Lee trying to take to eating quiet meat, but he's not going to be able to cook it. It'd be too noisy. So he's going to have to just be eating.
He's a refined
gentleman.
He's
going to eat raw quiet all the way along.
It's interesting because this is a situation where if he heads up to Canada, there's probably going to be a much sparser density and it's going to be colder, but it's going to make it a hell of a lot harder for him to get through the country.
Yes.
So I think most of the U.S. isn't that densely populated. It's only
No, but I'm more thinking about the fact that it's densely populated by animals, which is gives the quiets enough, right?
I would think we'd have just the same amount of animals as Canada would.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying it'll be colder up in Canada, so there'll be less quiets there. Because remember, we decided that like they're not actually going to be that. Hotter temperatures is going to be better for them.
But
so.
No, I think that Christopher Lee is going to have too many problems. He's going to be running into these creatures. It's going to be a dense fight. I think he's going to also his psychological system. Christopher Lee's the man. He's awesome. But like, you can only go so long with having to be perfectly quiet without making any noises as you're moving along
if
all by yourself.
If anyone could, it would be him.
Yes.
If anyone could. But you got the fear of death over top of your shoulder at any moment.
And we're breaking up.
There's no taking a quiet whiz. And I feel like Christopher Lee is the kind of guy that's not going to hide his whiz. He seems like he'd be pretty proud of each pee that he takes.
I think there's only so many waterfalls,
maybe.
I guess.
Yeah, he does know everything about them, but he's going to have patches without waterfalls, other things like that. And again, I think the snoring is going to do him in. I don't think his CPAP machine would be able to cover it up. And
I think maybe the end of his life, Christopher Lee. But if he's
we're talking about Christopher Lee in his prime, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We are.
As a young, fit spy man, as a sneaky
still
boy.
Still see him as snorer.
He would not
still
be snoring.
Still see him as a snorer.
I think I'm going to have to give this to Christopher Lee. No, not Christopher Lee, to the quiets. My bad.
God damn it!
But because Christopher Lee is in the top four, he'll get another chance, so it's not over yet.
Right.
Okay, second situation. We have the Flood from the Waters of Mars versus a Graboid. What happens is the Flood makes it into a rocket heading back for Earth from Mars. Inside a person, lands. The rocket crash lands in Perfection, Nevada, and
the opposite of Sam.
What can I say?
And
then gets the being, which is infected, escapes the crash, infects all the humans in that town, and then the Graboids attack. Who wins this, considering that we're in a very, very...
dry climate.
Dry area. Does that slow the virus down?
Oh, wait, who's taking which side?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So, Adam, you are the Doctor Who, you are the Flood, and
the Flood.
Dave, you're the Grabby Boys.
Adam, you want to make yours or you want me to take the first go here?
You go first this time.
All right. Let's also try to make these, like, I want to try and discuss. So I think the Graboids might be able to make this only from the idea that everything is going to be so dry. They're going to be able to move themselves further down in the dirt. We know that the waters of Mars lost out to freezing and other situations before. which would suggest that the virus can be desiccated. It can be moved away from a point that it wouldn't have water. And any virus in extreme heat is going to break down eventually. If it's separated for long enough, the structural integrity, the material that makes up the virus, can be destroyed. Viruses are very resistant, but if this one needs to be in water to exist, whether or not that's in a human being or frozen in a glacier or just in the running water through some stupid filter system, I feel like they might be able to make this. That if the graboids are moving away, there aren't that many of them, they're not seen super frequently, they could be in a hibernation state when the waters of Mars arrive, they might be able to survive. Their only big thing would be if any humans get infected, and Adam could talk about this,
All the humans are infected. That's the scenario.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Those eight humans in perfection are infected.
All right. If the graboids go into hibernation, if they burrow, if they get themselves away, they might be able to avoid this and avoid actually running into the virus and running into the problems. I worry, and Adam could talk about this, what would happen to them if they actually consume a human being or consume a creature that's infected. Adam, what do you got?
So, in the Waters of Mars, in the Doctor Who episode, we only see the Flood infecting human beings or attempting to infect a Time Lord, very much a human being-type organism. But that is because that is, for all intents and purposes, the only ambulatory sentient life on that planet. They do grow.
We know they got the Martians.
Yes, they got the Martians. So
we don't. They didn't get the Martians. The Martians froze the virus because they knew what was going on.
But we know that they got some of the Martians.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They had the potential to infect the Martian.
Yeah, fair enough.
So the first guy who gets caught is because he's eating a plant that was infected. So all of the vegetative life in a desert is going to be very, very good if it finds water, getting every single bit of that water out that it possibly can and to be able to subsist off of that. So these humans, if they're trying to infect other life forms, any kind of coyote, jackrabbit, a graboid, if a graboid eats them, spraying water around, it's going to get into the ecosystem, which means it's going to get into these plants, which are going to hold them as a reservoir for a long, long time. So anything that eats these plants is going to be infected. Anything that eats what ate that is going to be infected. It's going to spread throughout the food web.
He only got infected from the carrot because he was washing the carrot. It wasn't in the plant. He was washing the carrot in the water.
True, but I think I can argue that any kind of plant could be a reservoir for the virus itself. It wouldn't necessarily be infected, but it would be carrying it. And any organism that then ate it that has the potential to be a vessel for the Flood could then become infected that way. But regardless, any of this life in the desert is going to be congregated around a water source. And the water source is what the Flood is all about. So anything in that desert is going to be infected, and they're going to be screwed. These graboids are going for the humans at all times because they're about the right size for eating, as well as any animals that are going to be drinking water from the pumps, water from a well, anything in that system is going to be access to that water. They're going to get it. They're going to be infected. Graboids lose. They're going to be infected.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with Adam here. Like, I think that the graboids do need water in their system, and I think
I'd have to agree. I mean, I'm trying to play each side, but at the same time, totally agree with Adam here. The graboids are going to have to eat something. It's a virus that spreads really, really well between different living creatures. If it hits multiple creature bases, the only hope that the graboids would have is they have a clutch of eggs that's dehydrated, and they basically just wait until the waters of Mars wipes everything on the planet out, and then they come out and they're like, hey, everything else is dead, so we're not going to live much longer anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. And as somebody who studies disease ecology, this is right up my alley as far as what I know. So whenever you have a group of susceptible organisms clustered tightly together, like you would have in a desert, they're going to be much more likely to spread and catch any kind of disease or virus than they would be if they were more sparsely populated.
Our next matchup is Alonzo Harris versus Richard Strickland. So Richard Strickland from The Shape of Water, he is the one who crashes into Alonzo Harris at the intersection at the end of training day. Alonzo Harris doesn't have anything with him. He has no weapons whatsoever, but he can get back, you know, he's maybe 20 minutes drive, or, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes running, very fast running, back to the hood where he has his stash.
I've seen you run, it's not that fast.
Yeah, Richard Strickland has no nouse or anything like that, but he's got a gun.
Ow.
So they crash into each other at the intersection, and then, you know, what happens after that?
Who's taking which side?
Adam, you can be Dickless, and Richard Strickland. Dave, you're Alonzo Harris, yeah.
Alright, so Alonzo has nothing, correct?
Has nothing, yeah. He's got a car that's barely functional. He can try and make it back to where, as you know, all his weapons are stashed and that sort of thing.
Alright, Dickless Richard, Dickless Dick, is very much a trigger-happy, sadistic person who enjoys torturing living beings. Yeah. If he crashes, and does he have his functioning fingers this time, or does he have his rotted hand?
Yeah, that's an important question.
No, it's rotted fingers.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And that was his right hand, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was his right hand. Yeah, but he's got a gun.
Okay.
Yeah, but he's not. Okay.
Okay, he has a gun, but I'm guessing that's his non-dominant hand. So yeah. It's gonna be a bit tricky. But Alonzo Harris and he have just had an accident. They're in a bit of shock, but this is something that Dickless has gone through before. He's been in this weird, fuzzy mind state from having been this gangrene that's just sweeping its way up his body from this terrible surgical procedure, quote-unquote, that he did. So he's going to be used to this. He's going to get up a lot quicker than Alonzo Harris might. He's going to pull out his gun, execution style, right in the back of the head. But even if Alonzo Harris gets up and tries to run away, he's going to chase him down. And, yeah, I think the only way he wins this before Alonzo Harris gets back to his hood is if he's able to just get up and just cap him right in the back of the head before anybody can move.
Okay, so...
it's a tough one.
So you think Alonzo Harris will probably win this unless Richard Strickland is, like, right on the money, like, bang, he straight away got his...
Exactly.
Okay.
Which he seems to be very, very quick to violence at all times, so...
Okay. Dave?
Whose neighborhood are they in? Are they in Alonzo's, or are they in...
They're at that intersection where Alonzo Harris gets crushed into at the end of the movie where the Russians
They're in Alonzo's neighborhood. Alonzo has experience with the effects of drugs. He's often on, like, I can totally see him rocking some painkillers as he gets hit. I don't think he's even going to feel it. All right, we know that he can beat some serious ass from a lot of the film. We know that he is just a tough piece of shit, and we are in a neighborhood where he could have snitches, he could have people that are on his side.
They're not that close to his neighborhood, remember? That intersection was a good, like, 10-15 minutes drive from that area.
Maybe. All right.
Even then, the people in the neighborhood hate Alonzo Harris. They're going to love this. They're going to try to help Dickless out.
Right. So
I don't know. That is one white supremacist right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that this is... But I see Alonzo... hand. Right. I see Alonzo, his biggest problem that he's going to run into. I totally see him getting out. I think the painkillers are going to be in effect. I don't think he's going to be feeling shit. I think that he's going to get over there and just start beating the living shit out of Michael Shannon before he can get the gun out, before he can get around to doing that. I think Alonzo Harris's biggest problem is going to be this isn't one of his typical situations where he can just shoot Michael Shannon and plant the gun. This might be one of those, like, rare situations where the neighborhood sort of comes out, everybody's watching him, and he gets trapped in this boat if he might be able to not do what he wants to do. And that might present an opportunity for Michael Shannon, crazy bastard that he is, to just shoot Alonzo Harris at that point. I could see Dickless's... That would be Dickless's biggest moment. As Alonzo Harris freezes for a second, he's looking around the neighborhood, everybody's watching him, he's got no King Kong speech that he can give, or, worse yet, he starts to give the King Kong speech again, at which point it just opens up a perfect opportunity. Yep. But I can see him just... straight brawling opportunity.
But they both like to wax philosophical. They both like to get a speech, especially Michael Shannon talking about
this
why.
This could, but
man,
straight brawling opportunity.
You should never touch your dick before you wash.
Yeah,
it.
I think Alonzo
Harris
has
wash your
the
hands
same
after,
sorry,
after
I,
you
I,
touch
I,
your dick.
Yeah,
I think the missing fingers are going to work very much against Michael Shannon. I think the crazy usually works in favor, but I agree his dominant hand is going to be out of play here. And I feel like Alonzo's just going to lay into him.
Yeah, I feel like because Alonzo Harris wasn't that shaken by the car crash. It's all the bullets that hit him afterwards that really shook him up.
Yeah, it was the Russian guns that did the trick.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, all right. So, Richard Strickland is now officially out. Alonzo Harris goes on to play off against Christopher Lee, and I think we know how that one's going to go down.
Such a good fight.
And then we have Hans from The Troll Hunter versus Gollum. Very straight up and down. Ooh. Here. Hans just has to hunt Gollum down in the woods. He's got his caravan, he's got all that sort of stuff, but he's got to find Gollum and hunt him down.
Who's taking who?
Adam, yours is the Lord of the Rings man again. And Dave, you're taking Hans.
All right, I get to go first on this go, Adam. Hans is probably one of the most psychotic pieces of shit that we have run into in all of our episodes and all of our
series. Except for Gollum.
Possibly except for Gollum. And we can get on to this because it's going to be a hard fight. But Hans has got his car. Hans is a unwell man in terms of the lengths and the things he's willing to do. I think that he's got the traps, he's got the preparation, he's got the study. The only biggest thing working against him is I'm not quite sure how good Hans is actually at his study, because half of the stuff that we hear him say in the Troll Hunter, I'm like, nope, that's wrong. Nope, that can't be a real thing. Nope. So there is a small risk that Hans gets it into his head, thinks that Gollum's a troll, and walks up with the light gun and just starts flashing it at Gollum. Now, if he doesn't, if he actually dedicates himself to this, I'm also wondering if Gollum might even look at this guy and go, Jesus, he's got troll tails and excrement and other weird shit hanging up in his van. I'm not getting involved with this man. Because, I mean, he would cover his smell really, really well. He would totally, like, bathe himself in Gollum shit to avoid this. Hans is a messed up enough character to just be like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I feel like Hans's dedication in this situation could be weird, and we also have to struggle with the battle of, did Hans have rabies too? Because I would argue that Hans had rabies too.
There's no rabies in this situation, none. Okay, Adam, what's your...
Does Gollum have the ring?
No, he does not have the ring.
Does Gollum think that Hans has the ring?
No.
This is important.
Okay, good. I'm not fucked.
Okay. Well, Gollum is a sneaky motherfucker. He's been alive for hundreds of years, hiding out in caves and hiding from society at large. He's content by himself with his ring. Even if he has the ring, even if he is content, he's not using it, so he can't turn invisible. But he's still incredibly quiet. He's used to hunting in a cave ecosystem, which is one of those places where you have to be quiet to sneak up on anything because they can't see. So any senses they have are going to be keying in on the sound, much like a quiet. So Hans is used to hunting trolls, which the smallest of which is bigger than a human. So he's not going to be used to this small, maybe a meter and a half, but usually on all fours creature anyway, who is incredibly fast, incredibly agile.
Used to hunting in the dark, like Gollum.
Yeah.
Yes, used to hunting in the dark, but not used to being quiet. At least not quiet enough that Gollum is not going to hear him coming and be able to plan ahead or go around or climb into a tree and jump on top of him and just strangle the shit out of him.
Yeah, I'm giving this one to Adam. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I think Hans's weakness here is that he hunts big, ungainly creatures that he's generally faster than, and
I'm not positive that Hans is in the right mind to actually know what he's hunting. Yeah, like, I joke about him running up with, like, singing the troll song with the light gun, but it is a serious possibility, and I just see Gollum, like, ripping the gun out of his hand and just beating Hans to death. Yeah, like,
I think Hans is flat. Yeah. Alright, so Hans is like eliminated his kitchen as well. Pot
armor. It's done.
Right? Right, like he's got the armor on and Gollum would just wreck that
pops
thing.
It off. He just pops it off, so, like, pokes his eyes out.
In that case, this next one's a little bit of a doozy and I feel bad for this one. We have a Graboid going up against Gollum. So I don't have a scenario for this. I'm just going to say that the Graboids, we're looking at an ecotone, which is like an area where two ecosystems like kind of coincide.
Yeah, the mountains in the desert.
Yeah, we have the mountains in the desert coinciding, and Gollum's trying to get the precious, which is in the desert.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do I still have Gollum?
Yeah. Well, this is more of a free for all. This one, I want an open discussion on this one.
Okay. I think Gollum's fucked.
Yep. Okay.
He doesn't have any weapons.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Gollum is fast moving, but he doesn't appear to be that smart. He's gonna get.
He's very smart. He's very manipulative.
Well, no,
I
think what's gonna happen, because we've decided that the Graboids aren't as fast as they are in the movies,
Gollum is
right?
Fast.
They can't be. Gollum is quite fast. No. I think he's gonna outrun them, but then I think he's gonna get to the precious, and he's just gonna stand there. Marveling at it, and then the creatures are going to get him. Because once he's invisible, that doesn't matter.
Right, and that was exactly what I was going to get at. I think he's going to relax the minute he gets invisible, and he's going to think he's totally in the clear, and one of them's just gonna wreck him. The only thing that I struggle with here is we don't think that the Graboids are as strong as they were in the film, theoretically.
Yeah, yeah, Gollum still is big one... enough to swallow him whole.
They are, but Gollum is also crazy enough to chew his way out.
But he has four teeth.
I think...
He makes a point in the movie to say that we have four.
Yeah. And I can also see Gollum just going completely happy the same way that he does when he falls into the lava. Like, he gets the ring, the Graboid eats him, and he's still smiling all the way down into the GI tract.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, I got my precious, man.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
The Grabby Boy recovers from its defeat by the Flood and goes through to... Yeah, go.
Quick side note of just a 10-second... If the Graboid eats Gollum while Gollum is wearing the ring, does the Graboid turn invisible?
No, because that's not what the ring does. What the ring does is enhances the inherent ability or the inherent quality of whatever puts it on. So Gollum, because he's basically a hobbit, they're known for being sneaky and sly and being all but invisible to people that aren't really looking for them. That's why he turns invisible. It doesn't just make you invisible.
What happens to other creatures that put it on?
We never see any other creature put it on. That's why Sauron has all of his power, because he basically put all of himself into the ring, which is why him putting it on makes him even more powerful. But that's why Gandalf won't take it, because he would become a god.
Okay, cool. Alright, so the next one then to our final knockout before we get into the semi-finals is Alonzo Harris versus Sir Christopher Lee.
Where are they?
Is this a free-for-all, or are we taking sides here?
Christopher Lee is in the modern day. Alonzo Harris is in the middle of his stronghold. Christopher Lee's got to somehow get in there and assassinate Alonzo Harris. Alonzo Harris knows someone's coming for him.
Free-for-all, or are we taking sides?
Free-for-all again.
Nice.
Okay. I think Christopher Lee is going to be smart enough to kind of do a lot of research on this guy. He knows he's a cop. He knows that he's going to know someone's coming. So he's going to think of the best way to hide in plain sight as the most obvious thing. Maybe even just a guy coming to try to buy drugs in his hood. Sees him, breaks his neck, slits his throat, whatever it is. Possibly not even caring if he gets out alive himself. He just knows he needs to get the target for Queen and Country.
My only concern is that Alonzo Harris, as a white dude with a British accent, is going to stick out.
Sir Christopher Lee.
A very
tall white dude.
Right,
yeah,
a tall white dude.
If you know
who...
somebody's coming already, you're going to be set off by that kind of dude walking into your
right,
area.
Which is my main concern. Alonzo has access to the neighborhood. He's got people to back him up around his stronghold. You better believe it's fucking booby trapped. You better believe that he is doing a shit ton of coke and other stuff like that to sort of keep himself awake.
Yeah. But we know that he's a very smart guy, so I think he could easily get to Ava Mendez when she's out of the hood, knowing that she doesn't like Alonzo Harris. He's going to convince her to maybe poison him or just,
that's what I was just
put
thinking.
Put a syringe in his neck when he's sleeping or something.
Yeah, he could poison his coke. He could very easily poison his if Christopher Lee goes back up the supply chain, he might be able to get this done. I feel like he'd be more focused than Alonzo would on this kind of thing.
Much
also,
more.
Also, I'm not sure how seriously Alonzo would take this, because he doesn't take the Russian gangsters going to kill him all that seriously. Yeah. And that kind of backfires at the end of the film.
Well, I know, but I mean, the entire quest is to get all that money to pay off the Russians with.
It is, but it's not. But he doesn't ever seem like he's.
Yeah,
he's still doing a lot of other shit while he's doing that.
Yeah, I think a non-present, unknowing threat would make Alonzo Harris really paranoid as well. He'd go kind of go nuts.
He'd be doing too many drugs, and he'd be
way too much coke. Yeah.
The firing into the dark might fuck Christopher Lee if he's coming in for that neck break or knife slit, where Alonzo doesn't know he's there. He just turns around randomly and fires into the bathroom, and Christopher Lee's damn it, I thought this
on
was a
ceiling.
Good place to hide. Yeah, right?
I think Christopher Lee wins it. As hard as it's going to be, he has determination, he has intelligence, and he's not high on coke.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to give it to Christopher Lee because I love Christopher Lee, but
yeah,
I don't want to get biased here.
Me and Dave being undecided and Adam being for Christopher Lee, that's still 1-0, so I guess we got to give it to Christopher Lee.
All right.
Okay. All right. So, our final playoff is the top four. We the ones we thought would go through. Our semi-final is now Christopher Lee versus a Graboid.
Okay. Who's got who?
No, hang on, sorry. I take that back.
No, water submerged.
Christopher Lee versus the Flood. Christopher Lee versus the Flood.
Fuck.
Okay, who's got who?
This is
a good free for all. I'm sorry, Christopher Lee.
So, but it's the same situation. Like, he's in a small town, smallish town, not as small as that, but you know, he knows that there's a virus spreading through, and he has to.
Now I have another perfect scenario for Christopher Lee, and one that I think we can all answer in a pretty easy way.
Yeah.
So Christopher Lee finds himself on Moonbase 1, and he's the only person there, and one of the filters breaks. So now the virus is in the water, and Christopher Lee never becomes infected with the virus, because there is also an equal supply of alcohol and martini mix. And Christopher Lee the entire time never touches a drop of water. It's just like, nope, I'm content. I got this. I got a nice suit. And the virus never becomes a problem. Doctor Who arrives and he's like, yeah, you got this under control, it looks like. And Christopher Lee is like, yeah.
Okay. I actually prefer that scenario. So we're just going to do that scenario instead. So we're actually going to do that scenario instead. We're going to repeat this this section.
Damn
okay,
it.
So now we have Christopher Lee versus the Waters of Mars. Christopher Lee arrives on Bowie Base 1, and there are no other humans there whatsoever. The virus has broken out. Christopher Lee knows about it. However, there is an endless supply of alcohol. Can Christopher Lee get through a week?
Yes.
Yes, he can.
Yes,
okay.
he'll never touch a drop of water. He'll break out the martini mix. He's going to know about the filter. The poor virus is going to be sitting there like, you've got to drink at some point. And Christopher Lee's like, I've never touched a drop of that in my life.
Yeah.
And Christopher Lee.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. As we discussed, David Tennant is going to arrive there like all set to help like the Mars base. He's going to get there and Christopher Lee's going to be like, no, no, good sir. I've got this under control. Don't worry.
Allow
you
me
hurry
to pour
back
you a drink.
Yes. Hurry back to your funny little flu box.
I've been here for a week.
Right. Yeah. I can be here for years.
Yeah.
He'll be suffering from some dehydration by then, but he'll be alive.
Okay. All right. So the last and I think the most ecologically interesting one and the only really relevant one of this entire thing that's really, you know, kind of monster based. So sorry for anybody who wanted to hear deep ecological concepts explored this week, but I have attached a disclaimer to this one. Is a graboid versus a quiet boy.
Yeah, we talked about this one in the previous episodes, how interesting this would be. So, where are they exactly?
Yeah.
Desert.
Okay.
It's a good environment for both of them.
Yeah, it is. I mean, one of them, they're both operating on sound. This is an all-out brawl,
fight.
Too. This is a brawl. Like, they know where each other are. They just zero in on each other. Who wins? Graboids got
I worry the graboids wouldn't be able to get through the skin of the quiets, but at the same time, I worry the quiets are going to have some difficulty getting through the skin of the graboids. They both got tough skin. They're both designed for desert environments. They both lay their eggs in such a way that they dehydrate them. They both are tracking on sound. I mean, like, the worst...
Do
we think that the quiet boys were able to rip out the tentacle?
I worry they would because their claws are so sharp. And
their claws are really sharp. They're very fast. They're very strong for what they are. And
they're just
if
angry.
And they're very angry. If a graboid grabs one, the quiet boy is going to thrash around, tearing and pulling anything that's grabbing it. So even if the graboid doesn't lose all of its squirmy boy tentacles, it's going to lose most of them. And it's not going to be able to crush a quiet boy to death. The quiet boy is going to be able to either outlast it in a fight or just bite into its hide and just tear and rip until it gets to the juicy bits and kill it.
Yeah, I think we're going to give this to the quiet boys. Yeah, and I just think that they've got a more sustainable population. Like, they're better predators. Even if they can't win one-on-one, they're going to be able to outcompete them.
And the graboids are going to be so slow-moving. And the quiets are going to be able to sense them coming up underneath the dirt. They're going to be able to exactly pinpoint where they're coming from, and they're just going to be able to wreck them through the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's the case, yeah. All right. Well, there's a one ecologically relevant argument for this entire thing.
Yeah.
And so we are now back to where we started, Christopher Lee versus a quiet boy in the grand final.
Round two.
Round two.
All right. So we have
single quiet boy?
A single quiet boy versus Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee where is fully they? Armed, right?
Ooh.
Okay. Christopher Lee does he is have fully a tactical armed. Turtleneck?
He does not have a turtleneck, no.
Oh, that's going to work against him.
Yep, yeah. I think so. Is he at least wearing black?
He's. Why does that matter? Our boys can't see.
Yeah, so, wait, I have something for
it's
this.
It's a quiet boy. Oh, shit. Everyone listening at home, Dave just pulled out his dick.
Oh, he's gone and gotten a tactile neck, hasn't he?
I couldn't find my Archer t-shirt.
Oh, your Archer t-shirt, okay, fair enough. Yeah, that was way too big, wasn't it? My bad about that, yeah.
All right, sorry, so...
Yeah. Anyway, so yes, they are in, let's say, a
Is this a true round two? Has Christopher Lee fought them before at this time?
Yes, he's made it. He's in one deserted American town. That town we see at the start of A Quiet Place, right? He has... Ooh. He is fully
Okay, so the prepared. Middle of the US.
Yeah, middle of the US. He's fully prepared for what he's going into. Can he beat A Quiet Boy?
If he is fully prepared, I think this is a situation like Batman where if he has preparation, he's going to win. There's one quiet boy, he has tools and weapons. He's going to be able to devise a series of booby traps, much like the family in A Quiet Place does, except instead of warning them about the quiet boy's presence, it's just going to blast A Quiet Boy's face off.
Give me an example of the trap that does it.
You could do, what movie was this in, where they took shotgun shells and... They put the primer, the cartridge from a shotgun shell, into a light bulb full of screws.
Skyfall.
Skyfall, yeah. Which is a great film, but at moments.
It's a great film. Yeah, so we got that moments. Going. So they're not concerned about the light. They're not going to know he's turned on the lights or what he's even... They'll know he's there, but he flips the lights on. Fat! Screws peppering their body, confusing it, hurting it. He's going to have a series of boomboxes to play a lot of noise, to throw it off even more. And then he's going to get in real nice and close with his favorite method and just stab it right through the throat. But that would be an issue because if it stabs in the throat, it's going
to... Yeah, I think if he tries to stab him right through the throat, he's gone.
I think this only works in Christopher Lee's favor if he uses guns from a distance, which I can totally see him doing. Yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is I see Christopher Lee getting that rifle from the second Graboids film. The one that just punches... Tremors film. And Christopher Lee just setting himself up somewhere, and the poor Graboid like looking around as Christopher Lee like
quiet
holds
boy.
His breath and takes the shot. And the poor Quiet Boy is just...
Yeah, I think what's going to happen here is Christopher Lee, like you said, sets up that series of boomboxes, stands right next to one, wait until the Graboid comes over, smashes it to pieces, and then just headshot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see him methodically planning this out. Now, if he's doing one, that's totally fine. The problem is, I think he's going to attract a bunch.
No, but absolutely just one of this in this case.
Just the just one? If he's got just the one, I think Christopher Lee can take this.
Yeah. I think he's going to have a series of traps around these boom boxes that the Graboid comes and takes out. Gets in a couple of injuries with these, you know, little cartridge shells, that sort of thing. And then he finishes an already damaged Graboid, Quiet Boy off when it comes to... take out the boombox that he's standing next to.
Now the question is, I assume that the spy job occupation, that type of work, attracts a certain personality type, much like a fighter pilot does. Someone who's very full of themselves, maybe a bit cocky, and a very, very sure in their abilities. So I'm wondering is Christopher Lee's professionalism going to win through? Is he going to be able to do what we talked about, set up his trap, boombox, blast it in the head as soon as it comes over there? Or, having survived his fight, his slog, from the eastern coast of the U.S. all the way to the middle in Iowa, quite a distance, halfway across the continental U.S., is he then going to be so full of himself he thinks he can take it one-on-one, mano-a-mano, with a knife, and get shredded?
No, I think he's going to maintain cool composure.
I think if Christopher Lee survived the war, I feel like he's not the super overconfident one. He's the one that planned. And the fact that to this day, still during an interview, when
we'll talk
he's
about
like...
It.
Yeah, can I tell you something? And he, right, like,
can you keep a secret?
Can you keep a secret? Yeah.
Can you
so
keep
can
a
I.
secret? Yeah. Yeah. So can I. I feel like Christopher Lee's the kind of type, and I feel like he wouldn't even brag. Like he'd wipe out the quiet boy, and he'd just like return to his normal suburban life, make himself a stiff drink, and just like sit down and be like, "That was an interesting weekend."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we will then crown Christopher Lee the victor of the Cinematic Animalia Season 1 Royal Rumble. Thank you to everybody who's listened all the way along. Thank you to Tiberius, Taniquis, Tinkles for joining us on many occasions and providing moral support.
Yeah, it just did great. He was always there for us.
Thanks to everyone who's tuned in. It's been a real fun first season. We will be back in January with season 2. And until then, enjoy the holidays. Stay safe over Christmas, New Year's, all that rubbish. Don't get too wasted. And yeah, all the best.
Recommend us, watch the show, rate us, visit the website.
We are finally on Google Play.
Thank you, Adam.
And Apple Podcasts and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, you can find us at cinematicanimalia.com. You can find Adam and I writing constantly at ecologyforthemasses.com. And yeah, adios.